We'll see how it goes. So we've, last week, not last week, but the week before, we started a series in Romans chapter 12, and we're kind of just taking it kind of verse by verse, because there's lots of really cool things to talk about in this particular passage. So what I'd like to do this morning is just kind of recap by reading verses 1 through 2 of Romans chapter 12. So let's go ahead and turn to Romans chapter 12. It'll kind of help preface what it is that we're going to be talking about this morning. Romans 12, verses 1 through 2 read like this. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is a true way to worship him. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good, pleasing, and perfect. And when we read through those passages a few weeks ago, I mentioned I told the story of my car breaking down and on the way to Anaheim, on the way to Disneyland. And that beginning verse, that all he has done for you verse, is a memorial. It's a remembrance. Remember all the things that God has done. Remember the times when he provided for you, both physically and spiritually, that we are to offer ourselves over to God. And it's kind of cool because Paul's using kind of this Old Testament language of the old sacrifice system, but that we are supposed to be a living and holy sacrifice. And for these new Jewish converts, that would be really weird, because usually when you would give a sacrifice or an offering up, the sacrifice would be dead, because you would use it to atone for your sins. But he's calling us to be a sacrifice that is living, that is constantly offering ourselves up to God, to constantly remembering all the things that he has done for us. And he also calls out the fact that how we react should look different, how we think should look different than how the world would respond. So when we interact with people, how we go about our lives, they should look differently. They should want to be a part of what it is that we're doing on a daily basis. And if we get all those little things in line, we always kind of hear this theme. You see this theme of God's will. You begin to gain a purpose. Because when you have all these in line, your plan, your will is now God's plan and his will. And that ultimately we should be true worshipers of God. That this is, when we talk about the word worship, especially in today's American westernized culture, we kind of just boil it down to the four songs that we sing and the song that we sing in the end. And that if you can't play or sing or play guitar, or you can't play the piano, then you're not a worshiper. But our whole life, our whole, everything that we are, should be a true worship to God. And that kind of leads us into chapter 12, verse 3 today, as we kind of start talking a little bit more about the heart of the individual, but also it kind of introduces this other thing that that's kind of a overall and recurring theme, is this of grace. And what grace is, and what that looks like in our lives. So let's go ahead and read, start by reading verse 3. We're just going to go through one verse right now. So chapter 12, verse 3, it says, "Because of the privilege and authority God has given to me, I give each of you this warning. Don't think you are better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us." So I had kind of broke this down into two sections, and right off the bat, Paul starts by saying, because of the privilege and authority, and I also read this, have this written down in NIV. It says, "For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you." So Paul begins to frame kind of this warning with grace. And it's kind of interesting when we talk about grace, like what exactly is it? And I've actually found a pretty good reference to grace by reading this exact same passage in the Message version, in the Message translation. So I'm going to go ahead and read that to you here, because I think this really boils down this concept of what grace is. And it says, "I'm speaking to you out of a deep gratitude for all that God has given me, and especially as I have responsibilities in relation to you. Living then, as every one of you does, in pure grace, it's important that you do not misinterpret yourselves as people who are bringing this goodness to God. No, God brings it all to you. The only accurate way to understand ourselves is by what God is and by what he does for us, not by what we are and what we do for him. So this idea of grace, this kind of this framework, is the concept of grace is not bringing the goodness to God, all the good things that we could do, works-based, but there's this, it's just that God just gives the goodness to us. He gives it freely to us when we believe in Jesus. And that helps us frame that position of God and his will. But again, we can't do grace, we can't do community, we can't do that alone, because Paul knows that we get this grace, but then there's this thing inside of us that always wants to fight against it, that always wants to fight against this workspace or this goodness that we have to feel like we have to measure up to. And so that's where we get the second part of that verse. And it says, don't think you are better than you really are. And the NIV, it says, don't think of yourself more highly. And it's kind of neat when you break down these two phrases in the Greek, it kind of breaks down to this. It says, don't build an exaggerated fence. So I was like, because normally when we talk about scripture, a lot of times they talk about walls a lot of times. But this particular word uses an imagery of fence. And this particular way that it's used, this fence is designed to keep people out. And so when we read these particular, when I read this particular passage and I kind of comparing it to that, it kind of sounds like arrogance. And some people would even call that ego. I listened to a podcast called Don't Feed the Trolls, and they're always talking about this ego side. Because you know what a troll is, right? You know, you get on the internet and you post something that's somewhat political, and then somebody just comes over and says blah 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 blah, and then they don't comment back, and that's all they do. That's a troll. But then we also have inner trolls, so we call that ego. We call that arrogance. And it's kind of interesting when we think about people who are arrogant or people who are egotistical, because that's like never us in any context. Right? Because anytime we think of somebody who's arrogant or somebody who has a big ego, it's like, oh, no. That's not me. I could totally see that in them. So when I was doing a little research, I kind of found that there's actually 10, get this, very common ways that people are either egotistical or arrogant. So again, I'm going to kind of read through them here. And when I read through them, again, don't think of yourself. No. We would never think of ourselves in this way, because we can picture other people in our lives that do just this. So, for instance, if you are an arrogant or egotistical person, you tend to do what's called name dropping. All right? So you're in a conversation, and they are constantly putting, oh, I know this person, or I know that person, and they just always are trying to like, oh, I met this person, you know, we're like really good buds. So name droppers. They avoid eye contact. Interesting. So I'll always look you in the eye. They arrive consistently late to meetings and don't apologize. Oh, I do not like being late. That's like the worst thing on the planet. And they don't apologize. Again, this doesn't apply to us because we're not arrogant or egotistical people at all. It's only for the people in our lives. Use condescending phrases and put downs. Ooh, that's not a good one. This is interesting because it goes from manifesting kind of like in your mind, and it kind of affects you physically, but you have the strut or swagger as you enter a room. You know what I mean? You know, if you strut or swagger as you enter the room, you might be an arrogant person according to this list. Interrupt conversations frequently. Yeah? Ooh, Tiffany's like, oh boy, Jesse's kind of hitting all these for me, not for you. have an answer for everything. Who here knows that person no matter what it is, there's always an answer for? You have a problem and you just want the problem to be there, but oh no, there's a solution. Always one-ups the other person. Now, if there's ever like a people in my life that just like, ooh, just the one-up the person, I can think of one. And always one-up the person. Blast the competitors. If you're in a business, blasting the competitors, putting them down. And for me in my computer business, I could really easily do that because I could talk about the company that rhymes with Eekwad or whatever like that. Can't use their name. I can say, oh, they don't do a really good job, or the Antica Uter service or whatever like that. but they typically blast competitors. And this is probably the most biblical one here, blaming somebody else. Typically, if there's an arrogance in their heart, if there's arrogance in your mind, if you're building a fence, an exaggerated fence, a big fence, then it's never, ever my fault when something ever happens. And so it's interesting when I read that particular list, when I kind of reflect on verse 3, I could use this passage in leadership when raising leaders to kind of see how you present yourself. I could kind of use this to kind of like how you view other people in the conversations, how you interact with others. Because if you're an arrogant or an egotistical person, if it's all about you, about being selfish, it will manifest itself one way or the other. But the big question that I want to ask is how do you know if you're living a life of grace and humbleness and not arrogance or ego? How do you know? How can you begin to kind of unravel that? Because normally, again, if you're a narcissist, you don't know that you're a narcissist a lot of times. That's why I joke around with Tiffany. He's like, I'm not a narcissist because I'm admitting that I'm not. But how do you begin to live a life of grace? Because in the life of an arrogant or egotistical person, there is no grace and there's definitely no humbleness in there. Again, the second half of Romans gives us that answer. It says, be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourself by the faith God has given us. So I love it. We have to be honest with ourselves. The NIV translates that into think of yourself with sober judgment. So it's interesting too. So this is cool. This is why I like doing like digging down deep to word studies, is this particular phrase, these set of phrases use that same word fence. But this time there's a root word in front of it that changes the meaning of the fence. This time the fence is no longer used as to keep people out and keep your own arrogance and ego in. But this fence turns into a place of safety. That this fence turns into a place where you can begin to see yourself for who you are. So when you interact with people, that fence now has a gate. And that gate is used to evaluate yourselves. So then the question is, how do you evaluate yourselves? Because if we think about it, who really likes to take a test? Because that's pretty much what it is when you evaluate something. If you want to know if something's working, you take a survey. Or you take a test to know how much you know. It kind of reminds me of thinking like a driver's license. The worst possible thing on the planet, A, is DMV, right? DMV is pretty much the worst place out there. It's what I call the equalizer, because it doesn't matter how rich or how poor you are, your social status, you still gotta take a number and you gotta sit in those really hard plastic chairs. It's okay, right? it's okay. You get to meet people, yeah, you know, if you're aware. But when you take that driver's license test, right? Who, you know, if you all have a driver's license, so you all remember it. It took me 3 times to pass the test, and then 1.5 times to pass my renewal. So that just shows you how good I am at taking tests. But again, it's so nerve-wracking, right? Because you take this test and you think you got all the answers right. And my biggest like test anxiety is when somebody corrects it right in front of me. That just like causes my anxiety to go through the roof. Why? Because they got this red pen, and this red pen is full of ink. And every single time they put a red check mark next to it, you cannot deny that you got that question wrong. It just kind of makes you squirm. It makes me just go, man, can't I just like sit down? No. And if you're at DMV, you're above and they're below. So you could totally see everything that's going on down there. But that's how we evaluate people, to see if they can have some basic understanding of driving. And so we can sort of take that with our own personal lives and how do we evaluate ourselves? And I hate to tell you, but it takes people, and you can't do it by yourself. So this is kind of bullet point number one, I guess, if you could say it. If you want to learn how to evaluate yourself honestly, you need to ask somebody. Because if you go through life saying, I'm such a great fill-in-the-blank, or I'm really good at this or that, then there's a good chance that you haven't checked that quality with people close to you. So then who in your life do you have that can help evaluate those qualities, your walk with Jesus? Because it's really easy. Again, we talk about grace in the beginning, this entire living a life of Christ, even being a leader in a church. It's really easy, if you could hear some of the news out there, for the arrogance and ego side to creep in. Because then you become blind and unaware. I've been blessed enough to have a handful of people in my life where they call me out on some stuff. Bill Ludwig, I'm sure you guys have seen or known him once or twice. He's definitely helped shape some of my things in my life. I have another guy, one of my coaches, Tony Webb, he's helped. I even Daniel Machado. That's right. Daniel Machado and I, we get the best times when we're sitting on the backyard patio and we're drinking water or something like that. And it's in the cool of the day and we prognosticate. That's right. Talk about life. But all these people, again, Stephen Cole's another one. Gosh, I can name probably one or two more if I really sat down. But they give me the tough questions that lead to clarity as to who I am and my walk with Jesus. They say, I don't think that's true, or you may need to rethink that, or you may need to go back and check that. Because the arrogance and ego side just always wants to take over. Because when it comes to reality, it's really easy to live life with the fence number one, where it's really tall, it's a really big fence, and we don't let anybody in. Because really, it's great to have the truth hidden from us, like Bigfoot. People want to have the truth hidden, but they just won't believe it. But we love having the truth hidden from us. And you know, you can if you can begin to have a community of accountability, then and you begin to, say, mature spiritually, it's really, really easy to point out the people whose fences are really, really tall. But we love our fences, though. They help keep us together. They help maintain control. But it's kind of interesting, again, if you've been in an accountability community where you build each other up, when you begin, again, when you look at the people whose fences are clearly there, you begin to see that their life is really lonely because the relationships that they have aren't real. They're just superficial at that point. So again, when it comes to evaluating ourselves, we do sort of have to take a test. And that test is based off of your closest friends and family and how they see you. The other way we could also see how to evaluate ourselves is this kind of stop measuring ourselves to others. Because what does it say? It says, to be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourself by the faith God has given to us. And for me, personally, this measuring yourselves to others was something that I struggled with in my, in my early 20s. Because I wanted to live a life or wanted to have the things that these people had. And so I made a really clear and conscious effort to mimic things that successful business people did. And it's not to say that that's bad, but the question kind of goes like, why am I doing it? And so what do we measure our lives with? Does your measuring stick for success look like the world, or does it look like the faith that God has given to us? Because it's, you know, we're America. We have pretty much everything. And the television and iPhones and everything wants us to measure up to something that really doesn't matter. They want us to look better. They want the big one here is if you're on social media, there's a huge, again, it's crazy to think social media has taken over. And I'm definitely as guilty as everybody else. But there's a social science to what they present to you on these networks that you tend to get your self-worth measurement based off of how many people like your post. And it's not coincidental that it's that way. Our world wants to evaluate us how big your house is or how nice your car is and how many toys you have and how much money is in your bank. And for me personally, it's, because I get this a little bit, is how big your business is growing. And when I tell people that, well, I don't think I want to grow my business, they go, what? What do you mean? You got something really good here, and you don't want to, like, make it bigger? It's like, no, I think it's the right size. I think it's exactly where it needs to be right now. But then I look at, you know, I get, it's funny, the comment again is, don't you want to be like Mark Zuckerberg? And I'm like, no, I do not want to be like that guy. But again, those are those things I have to fight against because all of those things are arrogance and ego. They point me to something that is not the will of God, that I have to then live a life that is measured by faith in God for all the things he has given to me. So again, this evaluation is kind of tough because you have to be able to do it with other people. You can't be in a vacuum. You can't be in a bubble. You can't be in a fence. Because it's really easy to measure yourself against something that just isn't there. That my plan, the plan that I think I should be living, should be God's plan. And it's kind of neat because when you're living in a community, when you do life with people, something happens. When you begin to go get coffee with somebody, you begin to go get breakfast with somebody, you go get lunch with somebody. Life happens, and there's a reason for that. And we're going to end on these last two verses here. Verses 4 through 5. Again, this might sound a little familiar. It says, just as our bodies have many parts and each part has a special function, So it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. We talked about a few weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, just about how you have value, you have a gift, and that gift is needed to make this community at Northgate function. It needs those gifts and abilities to make our city function, to increase God's kingdom. But it's, I think it was interesting how this particular translation puts it at the end. It says, we are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. So when I read that, I kind of wrote these things down. That means that my interests start with your best interest. It means that your burden is my burden. It means that your need should be my provision. It also means that your weaknesses is my strength, but also, if this is non-egotistical, that my weaknesses are your strength. So there's a circle. It's not just in one. It all happens. If you're in a community of accountability, if you're in a community, if you want to be live a life without arrogance or ego, then there has to be some kind of sharing. And again, it's tough because I think it's the more and more I see the Christian community and how things have progressed in the United States, and I see my generation, which is the Generation Wires out there, there's a lot of oppression that has happened with having to be a certain way, and that it doesn't, I don't know if that was entirely proper, because there's people in these Facebook groups and in these spiritual communities that I'm a part of that wrestle with some stuff, and they had no place to share it except through this kind of group. This group where they says, you can come and be yourself and share stuff that you haven't shared with anybody else. And then you begin to see, it's the Bad Christian podcast Facebook group. And there's some really confused, really these young and older people who just didn't have that growing up, who didn't have that Bill Ludwig, or didn't have that Stephen Cole, or didn't have a buddy like Daniel where you could just go and talk about stuff, and you could begin to see that there was something missing in their life, and that is now becoming the norm. That the normality of this Christian movement, of this Jesus movement, is going to be communities where we talk about stuff that before we just left in closets. Which is scary, because it requires vulnerability, it requires all kinds of stuff for you to be able to say, I don't have the answer to. But at the end of verse 5, we all belong to each other. We're all part of the same machine. We're all part of the same community, and that all wants to progress into what God's will is for our lives. So the worship team's going to come on up, and I just got just a few things here. Some final thoughts is, who will win the war of our hearts and our minds? Will it be the ego, arrogance side, or will it be a life that's full of grace, that we begin to, again, take these fences and put a gate in them? That we would begin to have communities where and fences and all kinds of places where we meet, where it's now a place of safety. And I would encourage you, if you don't know, if again, when we talk about this kind of stuff, it's never, oh, it's never me. But if you need somebody to be in an accountability and some kind of community, I encourage you to find them. If you come talk to me, we can make something happen. And if you find somebody, these are just four real basic questions that could have pretty big implications. If you find somebody, you should ask them this, is, how do you view my life and actions? How do you view my interactions with people? Am I selfish in the decisions I make? And am I measuring my life to something unobtainable? And for yourself, you can ask those questions yourself. Of course not. But then if you ask somebody who knows you and they go, yeah, I know that you always wanted, you're always striving for something. It may click that light bulb on. It may do something. But again, I think it's worth it. I've definitely seen some growth in my life through this accountability side. But again, not everybody has that. And so again, I would say encourage you to go find somebody, get together with somebody outside of Sunday, and begin just to talk. Begin to have coffee. Go get breakfast. Go get lunch. Go play racquetball with somebody. And this will just happen. Because you can't do life with somebody without them seeing you, who you really are. And for me in my life, I'm definitely on a progression. I don't have this all figured out, but I got people who will call me on stuff, and I think that's important. So I'm going to go ahead and pray, and then the worship team is going to go ahead and take it away. So here we go. So Father, as we talk about our lives again, Lord, as we talk about how they align with your life, I just pray that that we would be people who don't find themselves in a position where the fences that we build are out of arrogance or ego, that we have it all together, that we have the answer. That, Lord, that we'd begin to build these fences with a gate, that we begin to be the people of safety, that we'd be the community of accountability. Lord, if there's somebody here, Lord, that needs to talk, or there's somebody that's on our heart, Lord, that we haven't thought about in a long time, but it's just as we sit here and pray that there's somebody on our heart that you kind of are pushing us towards, that I think they need to talk, or they think they need a community, Lord, I pray that you would bring them to our minds right now. And Lord, I just also pray that they would, that thought would then turn to action. That we would go and initiate a conversation. That we would initiate a coffee time or lunch. Father, help us to evaluate ourselves honestly. And Heavenly Father, just help us to remember all the things that you have done for us. Because when we remember that, we can remember that it's only by grace that you've even allowed us to do the things in your kingdom. That it's nothing that we could do, but it's what you've given to us. So Father, I just thank you for today. I thank you for this community. I thank you for your word. And we just pray this in your name. Amen.